Speaking of Wednesday staples, our good friend Rob Volman from HockeyAbstract.com joining us, as we always do on Wednesday afternoons, take a look at the NHL world, the hockey world, from an analytical standpoint. You and I spent some time yesterday in what was a very interesting, very eventful day, not only in Calgary, but around the NHL. And maybe let's start there, Rob, and that is the Ottawa-Toronto trade that involved Dion Phaneuf, who was in town to play his former club but left to go join a new club. What do you make of that deal?
That seems like I can't join you in the press box without some major move being dropped these days. But I guess my big take of it is Toronto has done a great job clearing out a lot of contracts, whether that's Kessel, Clarkson, or Phaneuf. And quite frankly, when you use statistics to measure the value of a contract, Phaneuf's contract is generally put forward as one of the examples of one that's overpriced or has too much risk or was just an overreach and has been since the moment it was signed. And so I really think from Toronto's perspective, it was clearing out sort of a big cap problem that I think his contract represents. But the other message here is until this season, historically, Phaneuf was always hung out to dry in Toronto. He had all the tough minutes. He took on all the tough opponents with big minutes, never had a lot of help. Like, he was just crushed out there in Toronto. And now that he's going to Ottawa, where they've got Erik Karlsson as the clear minute eater, as the clear number one, I think you might see an improvement in Phaneuf's game.
It's an interesting move on the ice, but off the ice as well. And part of the conversation that you and I had is the obvious one about the job that staff has done in Toronto over the last couple of years, or the last year, calendar year, really clearing the deck, right? Because, you know, Phil Kessel, Dave Clarkson are gone. I mean, this is a team that potentially is well-suited, at least contractually, moving forward, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you've noticed the slight influence of maybe hockey analytics and maybe how their moves have more and more become aligned to the sort of things that I talk about, as opposed to the past when they were in stark contrast, it's because they have built an analytics team. It starts with the assistant GM, Kyle Dubas, but he's hired a team that includes Cam Chiron, Rob Petipis, Daryl Metcalf, Bruce Peter. Until the past year or two when they signed on with the Leafs, these were sort of my peers and colleagues writing about hockey analytics for various blogs and magazines and other publications around the league. And Toronto's really built a very quick team. And so it's no surprise a lot of their moves are starting to match the things that I talk about.
So can you give us a little bit of the on-ice hints of that? I mean, you said that you're seeing influence there. What do you see?
Well, a lot of the moves. And like a classic example, like during the summer, from time to time, front offices do give me calls to ask my opinion about certain players. And last summer, one of the players that I did promote and talk about was Daniel Winnick. I mean, I didn't have any contact with the Leafs, but obviously they reached similar conclusions because that's, of course, where Winnick landed, and he's been playing very well there. I think it's also interesting that Toronto was the team to get value out of players that never really were solid NHLers, like Martin Marincin or Matt Hunwick or Mark Arcobello, or guys that are sort of just always on the fringe. Toronto was a team that was able to identify the value of those players and actually get them into real NHL, legitimate NHL jobs.
With our good friend Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract, we move from the Leafs and the Senators trade yesterday to two of your articles, your ESPN article this week and your NHL.com article. Let's start, first of all, with the ESPN article. And this is interesting because for the second time here, or maybe more, but the second time in the last month or so, you've kind of gone out and made a case for a deal that makes some sense this time. I mean, in fairness to you, you were the one that called the Johansson and Seth Jones deal, Columbus and Nashville, earlier in January. But now you're looking at Boston and Louis Erickson, who's a pending unrestricted free agent. What are you seeing there?
I think the move that makes the most sense, and I wrote about the logic on ESPN, is if Erickson went to Minnesota for a defenseman like perhaps Matthew Dumba. And the logic is, first of all, Boston needs a defenseman. Like, you don't need a copy of Hockey Abstract. You don't need a spreadsheet. It's clear that team desperately needs a top four defenseman. Now, where can Erickson go? Well, obviously, you're limited to teams that have a defenseman. are in the playoffs and therefore looking to make a move now rather than this summer, and also a team that needs Eriksson, that needs a forward that can score at the top six rate, that needs help on both special teams, that needs help in the puck possession game. And there's really only one team that fits that entire description, and that's the Minnesota Wild. And it just so happens they've got four great defensemen under contract already in Suter, Spurgeon, Scandella, and Brodin. And Brodin's injured right now, but they have those four guys mm-hmm. under contract, leaving Matthew Dumba and Christian Folin sort of way down the depth chart. And Dumba, I think, is ready to make that step into the top four. So that's why I sort of say Dumba makes the most sense. He's a pending RFA. That gives Boston a bit more flexibility contract-wise. Because if they don't have the cap space for Eriksson, they don't have the cap space for the other four. So that's why I'm calling Eriksson for Dumba.
The age-old one that jumps out at me, not analytical at all, is the age. Here, the age-old, okay, great line, but there's a huge age gap between these two players. You're giving up an older player for a younger player. Is that not something that raises some alarm bells?
Well, it is possible that, I mean, obviously Boston might have to sweeten this deal. I mean, they're shipping off the pending UFA, so they might have to sweeten the deal with a prospect of their own, a forward prospect. But, you know, the centerpiece of the deal really would be Eriksson for Dumba. But it's also about building towards a window. Boston's trying to reconstruct its blue line from basically nothing, whereas Minnesota is trying to squeeze out one last playoff run with the core they already have. So it's all about the windows.
What is it about Eriksson in Minnesota, though? I mean, he joins. I'm getting ahead of myself. If that were to happen, he would join a group with, you know, a pretty interesting mix up front. You know, Parise, Koivu, a little older, Coil. I mean, that's an interesting group of forwards. What would Eriksson add to that group?
Well, the big advantage for Eriksson is two things: versatility and trust. Eriksson is a player that is trusted. He's trusted to take on the top opponents. He's trusted in both zones. Some of those guys in Minnesota are only trusted in certain situations or in certain roles, whereas Eriksson has the versatility and the trust that you can actually put him wherever he's needed. And that's why I think, that's another reason why I think Eriksson would be a good fit there.
Rob Woolman, our guest here on The Big Show this afternoon. It's our Hockey Abstract segment. You wrote for ESPN. You'll also write for NHL.com, and it's a column on a young man that is really beginning to open a lot of eyes this year. Early on, everybody in Detroit was raving about Dylan Larkin, but I think after the All-Star game, and I think as we get deeper in the season, everybody is beginning to wake up to this young man, that the Detroit Red Wings have another superstar in the making.
Yeah, I really enjoyed writing this piece. It comes out tomorrow morning on NHL.com, because when the season began, everybody was talking about Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, and rightfully so. But Dylan Larkin really flew under the radar, which is strange, because Dylan Larkin, at age 18, was lighting up U.S. college hockey. And let me tell you, 18-year-olds normally don't light up college hockey. 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, fine. But 18-year-olds, I mean, that we're talking about Jonathan Toews. We're talking about Jaden Schwartz. There's not a lot of guys that can succeed. And when they do, this is exactly the impact they have in the NHL. In fact, Larkin is only 3 points ahead of our statistical projection of what his scoring rate would have been. So really, Larkin, his scoring rate shouldn't be that big a surprise. The difference is his plus-minus. His plus-minus, which leads the league at plus 26, is mostly an illusion. It is mostly hot air, and it will come back down toward zero. But his scoring levels are absolutely legitimate and exactly as projected.
Flesh that out for me, a little bit of an illusion, and it will come back down to earth. Why? What is it that gives you the confidence to make that prediction?
Well, a player's plus-minus is dependent upon a lot of different things, some of which the player has no control over. And one of the things that affect the plus-minus is the team's shooting and save percentage when the player's on the ice. And by and large, Larkin can't really influence those things. He can't influence how many pucks that Mrazek stops in nets. He can't really influence everyone else's shooting percentage, and yet that's the biggest component of his plus-minus. And it just so happens Detroit goalies have a .954 save percentage when Larkin's on the ice, and Detroit scores on over 13% of their shots when he's on the ice. I mean, basically, the shots are even when he's out there. The shots are even. But because of those skewed percentages, he's got that plus-26. And that's why it's a little bit of hot air. That's why we say it's hot air, and it's probably going to come back down towards the team average.
Rob, before I let you go, I want to let people in on a little conversation we were having at the dinner table prior to yesterday's game, and it was something that you raised about the importance and the advantage, actually, of getting things wrong. You were pretty upfront this week. You pointed to a couple of predictions and comments made in October, and they didn't come to fruition. And that's, I think, very important. I mean, you know, we're all asked for our opinions. We make opinions, and that's what they are. They're opinions. They're not necessarily facts. And you've been very much culpable about the information that you pass along. And I thought it was an interesting conversation we had yesterday.
Yeah, specifically, it was about early in the season when Montreal's off to a good start. I analyzed the numbers and I said that, hey, they're more than just a goalie now, you know, whoopsie daisy. And then I looked at Columbus after did the coaching change and I said, oh, this isn't a bad team. They just hit a bad streak. You know, whoopsie daisy. So we do make mistakes, but the advantage when you use numbers, when you use stats and you make mistakes, the advantage is everything you've done is transparent. Everything you've done to arrive at that conclusion is right there in black and white. So when it goes wrong, you can go back and you can pull out your study and you can find out exactly where you went wrong. And furthermore, when people read your analysis, if they think you're wrong, at least they can sort of point out, they can look at your logic and they can see where they think you went wrong. And then, you know, they don't necessarily go to the bank with it. So that's the real advantage of using numbers, is that you can improve and other people can sort of see where you're coming from and then respectfully disagree.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Before we let you go, let's give the website a plug, hockeyabstract.com. And in particular, as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline, just under 3 weeks away, I still think the player usage chart is a great tool to have if you're wondering about a player who might be coming to your team or leaving your team and what they really are about. So I want to make sure everybody checks it out, especially as we get closer to the trade deadline.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. And I'll just add, too, that when you're using that tool, remember to go back and look at previous seasons. Don't just look at what's currently happening now. Go back and look at how the role has changed or perhaps how it's persisted.
That's a great bit of advice. Rob, thanks for doing this. Next week, we'll do it all over again.
Yeah, see you next week, buddy.